number one. We say as a matter of a declaration of faith, of emunah, and we'll learn more about this next year in the Yud Gimel Ikrim course, please God. Anima Amin, number one, be'emunah shleima, shekol ha-Torah ha-matsuya ha-tav yadeinu. This is from the famous Anima Amin you'll find in your Siddur at the end of Tfilat Shacharit. I believe with a perfect faith, says the Anima Amin, shekol ha-Torah ha-matsuya ha-tav yadeinu, that all the Torah which we have today in our hands, he ha-nesunah ha-Moshe Rabbeinu alav shalom, is the Torah which was given to Moshe Rabbeinu. Now, which Torah is that talking about? Is that talking about Torah in its widest sense? Is it talking about the written books of Moses? What is that talking about? So, the first eight sources on the sheet on page one, I'm not really going to deal with in detail. They are talking about the written Torah, which I'm not really here to talk about. How did the written Torah get written? But suffice it to say a couple of things. People have this idea that Moshe Rabbeinu came down from Har Sinai with a Sefer Torah under his arm. He did not. For obvious reasons. First of all, it doesn't say anywhere that he did. What did Moshe get on Har Sinai, according to the verses? The Luchos, the tablets. Did he give those to the Jewish people? No, he smashed them to pieces. And then later, on Yom Kippur, he came down and he gave the Jewish people the tablets the second time, etc. But Moshe Rabbeinu clearly did not come down from Har Sinai carrying a Sefer Torah for obvious reasons.
Why did we bring that arm?
I have no idea.
I always pictured that.
Maybe you
it's
pictured
it. Disappointing that you said that.
Well, you'll soon see in a minute it's not disappointing, it's enlightening. Because if Moshe Rabbeinu had a Sefer Torah in his hand, then do me a favor, why did he send out the spies in Parsha Shlach? Just roll forward like three bits and realize that it's like a disaster. Why did he hit the rock? Just roll forward to page 9 and realize, oh no, don't hit the rock, it's a bad. He didn't have a Sefer Torah in his hand, that's for sure. And nowhere in the Jewish tradition does it say that he had a Sefer Torah in his hand. How did the Sefer Torah become written? And again, this is not really what we're talking about today, but I'll mention it. The Jewish understanding is that the Sefer Torah was finished, finally, at the end of Moshe Rabbeinu's life. And it says that explicitly in the Pesukim. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Parshas Netzavim, and Yivayelech. Right at the very end, Hashem says to Moshe, now write down the Torah. Now write down the Torah. Now there's a debate in the Talmud, was it in installments before that? Like he had lots of different kind of steps and manuscripts and he put them all together? Or was it all written down at the very end? Either way, which I'm not getting into now because it's very interesting but not for now, either way it was written and finished at the end and edited by Moshe Rabbeinu at the end. And you can see, if you're looking carefully at the verses, you can see it was edited at the end. Why? Let me give you a little insight. In Parshas Beshalach, which happens just after the Jewish people leave Egypt, right? At the very beginning of the Exodus. It says that the man began to fall. Okay? How long did the man fall? So it says in Parshas Beshalach, and the man fell for the Jewish people for 40 years. And you should be thinking to yourself, 40 years? Parshas Beshalach? Where did 40 years come from? There's no one thinking of being anywhere for 40 years. They only ended up being there for 40 years because of Parshas Shlach, which is the Meraglim, which is the spies, right at the other end of the Torah. Why are they talking about 40 years in Beshalach? You should have thought of that question. It took me a long time to work out that question, so maybe you didn't think of it. But the point is, it's obvious. Moshe Rabbeinu wrote it all at the end. He put it all together at the end, and that's clear. And therefore, by the end of Moshe Rabbeinu's life, the understanding is that we had a Sefer Torah, which is the Sefer Torah that we have today. And the truth is, this is a fact, that the Sefer Torah that we have today is identical all over the world, with one or two very, very small adjustments. The Yemenites have a very, very slightly different Sefer Torah, like a Yud here and a Hey here and an Aleph there. There are about 20 differences between a Yemenite Sefer Torah and our Sefer Torah. So when people say that every Sefer Torah is exactly the same, that's not quite true. But none of those differences are differences that make a difference. Yeah, they're not major theological issues, they're tiny little things here and there. Everyone else has the same Sefer Torah, and to that degree, that is what number one is talking about. The Torah we have today is the Torah we were given by Moshe Rabbeinu. If you're familiar with the documentary hypothesis, and P, D, all that kind of stuff, very happy to discuss it. I'm also familiar with it, but it's not for now and it's not our subject. We clearly don't subscribe to the documentary hypothesis, I recommend some good works to read on that if you're interested. But for now, I'm more interested in the oral Torah. Go over to page 2, because this is where the fun begins. When Moshe Rabbeinu goes up Har Sinai, he's told the following. Source number 9. Vayomer Hashem el Moshe, Alei Eli Hahara, come up to me on the mountain, God says to Moses. Vehayesh Sham, and you'll be there. Ve'etne Lecha, and this is what I'm going to give you. And here's a shocking one. This is a list in the Torah, in the verses, of what God tells Moses that he's getting on Har Sinai. Let's go through them. Et Luchot Ha'Eben, the stone tablets. Okay, that's clear. Ten Commandments, etc. The HaTorah, and the Torah, which we know is not a written, the scroll, because it wasn't given on Har Sinai, we just said. The HaMitzvah, and the Mitzvah, Asher Kasavti L'Horasan, which I have written for you to teach them. So it's clear from the verses itself that Moshe Rabbeinu is receiving much, much more on Har Sinai than just the Ten Commandments. He's receiving the Ten Commandments and the Torah and the Mitzvah. Okay? So let's see what that means. The starting point in any discussion on this is in Brachos, in chapter, the first chapter of Brachos in the Talmud, in Brachos Hay. Look in number 10, please. Amar Rabbi Levi Bar Chama Amar Rabbi Shimon Ben Lakish. So this statement is made in the name of Rabbi Shimon Ben Lakish in the Gemara. My dichtiv, why does it say, and it quotes the verse we just read in number 9, what do these words mean? And the Gemara now goes through each of these words, the shopping list, and says, this means this, this means this, this means this. Let's have a look. Luchais, the tablet, Ela Aseret HaDibros. These are the Ten Commandments. Easy. Torah, Ze Mikra. This is the written Torah. Well, one second, I just said that they didn't get the written Torah on Har Sinai, so what does that mean? Okay, question. The HaMitzvah and the Mitzvah, Zu Mishnah. This is Mishnah. What? This Mishnah? You got the Mishnah on Har Sinai? The Mishnah was put together in which year, roughly? To the nearest 100 years? 500? 200. 200. So when was the Torah given? Which year? In secular years? It's a good date to remember. You can't forget this date. 1313 BCE, okay, or 2448. Either way, you can't forget the date. This one is just double 2448, which is the same number 1313, okay? The Torah was given in that time period. The Mishnah was put together 1500 years later. So how can it be, like this girl asked on the bus in Poland, how can it be that the Mishnah was given on Har Sinai? Just said it was, okay? Asher Kasafti, which I have written, carries on, Elu Nevi'im v'Ksuvim. These are the books of the prophets. The Nevi'im, the Ksuvim. You Joshua, Judges. Which Nevi'im are you learning in this man?
Malachim.
What happens in Malachim with Aleph or Bet?
Bet. First,
okay, the first bit of Bet?
Eliyahu,
fine. So according to this Gemara, all of the story of Eliyahu that's written down in Malachim Bet is given on Har Sinai. Does that make any sense to you? Doesn't make any sense to me either. And it also not only does it not make sense, but it goes against the Gemara. The Gemara says, who wrote the books of the prophets? And it goes through. Joshua was written by Joshua. No surprises there. Samuel was written by Samuel, the first bit anyway. Kings was written by this one. So why is it telling me that the books of the prophets were given to Moshe Rabbeinu? I mean, what did he do when he died on his deathbed? Under the table, he gives Joshua a book and says, this is the book of Joshua. You know, keep it safe, because you're going to write this in 25 years. Does that make what sense does that make? Lahoira Sam to teach them Ze Talmud. That is the Gemara. Malamit Shikulam Nachum the Moshe Mitzina. That everything was given to Moses on Sinai. So the Gemara makes a very clear statement. Everything was given to Moses on Sinai. The Torah, the oral law, the written law, the Mishnah, the Talmud, the books of the prophets. Even though there's loads of questions, it doesn't make any sense yet, etc., etc. That's what it says. And it goes even further. Have a look in number 12. Let's skip to number 12. This is a quote from the Gemara Yerushalmi. Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi Omar, Mikra, Mishnah, Talmud, Agada, the Mikra, which is the written law, Mishnah, the oral law, Talmud, Agada, all the Midrashim, Afilu, even Mashe Talmud Vatik, what an intelligent student, Atid Lahoyrus was going to teach in the future. Lifnei Rabba, in front of his Rebbe, Kfar Ner Mela Moshe B'Sinai was already given to Moshe B'Sinai. Anything that you're going to come up with in this class, the Shua is going to say some brilliant new idea that no one's ever thought of before. Nah, Moshe already thought of that idea. Don't worry, it was all given on Har Sinai. Matam, why? Why should this be? Says this Tzul. Yesh Dava Shayoma, so someone might say in the future, hey, look, Zechadosh HaChidoshu, this is new. New idea, we believe in Chidosh, right? New ideas coming out of the Torah. Meshiva, his rabbi can reply to him, or his chaveru, his friend can reply to him, va'omer, and say to him, loi, kvar hayala olamim, this was always there. So you didn't bring this up. Moshe Rabbeinu already got this. So it's clear from this first set of sources that it's telling us that everything was given on Har Sinai. Now, therefore, the rabbi, when he says to the student on the bus in Poland, was the Gemara given on Har Sinai? Yes. It's clear in the Gemara. Fine. But the student's question remains, and all the other questions remain that we said as well. And I put some of these questions down. You know, how can it be that Moshe had the text of later texts before they were happened? How could it be that later books were written by him when they were written by them? And also, what does that do to Chiddush? It seems that there's nothing new anymore. We're just playing out a kind of script. We're just reading from a preordained script, and any new idea that comes in the world, it's already been there before. Now, put that in one side of your brain and store it there, like minimized box. Now, another set of sources from the Jewish sources seem to say the opposite. Seems to say, what did Moshe Rabbeinu receive on Har Sinai? The basics, the outline. And where did the details come from? Well, some of them from there, but some of them came later. We're going to have to put those two groups of sources together and kind of crunch them and make it work. But have a look at number 13. The Medrash artist, he called Torah Lamad Moshe. Did Moshe really learn the whole Torah? Ksiv b'Torah, isn't it written about the Torah? Aruchim eretz midah. It's broader than the land. It's longer than the land. Varachim in a yam and wider than the sea. Well, Arba'im yom lamda Moshe, and in 40 days on Har Sinai, Moses learned the whole Torah. Ridiculous. Moses learned about electric shavers, about surrogate mothers, about electricity on Shabbos. Rosh Moshe learned all of that. Says, no, Ella klalim lamadu HaKadosh Baruch Hu Moshe. What did Hashem teach Moshe? This is a very important word. Says, this was klalim. What's a klal? Klal is from the word general ideas, klal Israel. Yeah? Klal. He's talking general principles, general ideas, klalim. And in fact, the Sefer HaIkrim, which is a later source, written in the 1500s, 1400s, says this explicitly explains this idea. Look at number 14. It's impossible for the Torah to be complete, but offered in such a way which will suffice for all times. Because the details, which are always being renewed and invented, but in Yanim Anashim, in human life, the mishpatim, in law, in legal issues, the hadvarim hanif'alim, and new things which develop, heim rabim ma'od, there are many, many such details, mishichlalam sefer, more than you can keep in a book. Al kain, therefore, natnu l'moshe b'sinai al peh, so what did Moses get orally on Har Sinai? Look at these words carefully, I'm at the end of the second line of 14, drachim kolalim, general principles, this word kolel, by the way, the kolel there, people learn, it's from the same word, kolel, it means everybody learns together, okay? Drachim kolalim, general principles, nirmazu b'Torah, b'Katara, which I hinted to in the Torah, slightly, kedei she'al yadam, so that through those principles, yotziu hachamim b'chol dor v'ador, the generation, the rabbis in every later generation, will be able to bring out hapratim hamitchadashim, the details which need to be developed. So what the Sefer HaIkrim is describing here is a much more naturalistic system. Moshe was given basic principles, and he was given tools in order to bring out details that would be coming up later. So that if you'd have gone to Moshe Rabbeinu and said, Moshe Rabbeinu, can you use a microwave oven on Shabbos? Is that called cooking? According to the first set of sources, we'd have gone, microwave oven? I have a whole book of microwave ovens right here. We got this on Har Sinai, microwave ovens. 101. Okay? According to the second set of sources, Moshe would have said, look, I don't know what a microwave oven is. God never mentioned it. But you tell me how a microwave oven works, and I have all the sources at my fingertips to be able to tell you whether that's Musa on Shabbos or not. I have the principles. I know what cooking is on Shabbos. By the way, it's not so straightforward whether a microwave oven is cooking on Shabbos. Just so that you know. You can't use one because they're electric. But it's not so straightforward that that's called cook. If something is cooked in a microwave, and then you want to cook it again on Shabbos, do we say, Ein B'Shalach HaBishol? There's a whole big super effect. Not for now. So, there's two different approaches as to how that would work. And what I want to do, you understand the two approaches? Questions up to now? Maybe a couple of questions?
What is that
the right Sefer HaIkrim was Rabbi Yosef Albo. Rabbi Yosef Albo was a philosophical thinker, lived in Spain in the 1400s. He was just before the expulsion from Spain. So you see very clearly there are these two lines of Jewish sources. One seems to say everything was given on Har Sinai, and one which seems to say something was given on Har Sinai, basic principles, and later things were worked out. Okay? What I now want to do is now crunch those two boxes together and tell you how they fit, and give you two approaches, the second of which is the main one, as to how those things fit together. Okay? So, let's go. Page 3. We're doing fine for time so far. So, answer number 1 is the less important answer, which is D. Answer number 1 is going to say, okay, Moshe Rabbeinu did receive everything on Har Sinai, but he received everything by way of kind of a vision prophecy. That's what it means that Moshe got everything. That doesn't mean he taught everything to Yahshua and that it was all passed down. Let's see what that means, and we'll go on to the second answer, which is actually more important. There is actually a source for this first approach, which is in the Talmud, Yerushalmi, number 14. Amar of Yitzchak, Ksiv, it says, V'oisi tziva Hashem. God, Moshe says in the Torah, in Dvarim, God has commanded to me personally. It says, V'oisi, V'oisi, why is it stressed, me? Shenemar, because Neemar li dvarim shenemar lachem, because something says the Gemara here, that he taught me so that I teach them unto you. But Neemar li dvarim, and he taught me other things, shenemar b'ni levein atzmi, that I have to keep to myself. Moshe Rabbeinu seems to be indicating here that there are two kind of levels of what he got on Har Sinai. There's the stuff that he passed on, and there's the stuff that he kept to himself. Now, you might ask yourself, what's the point in telling Moshe Rabbeinu stuff that's just for him? Okay, we'll talk about that in a minute. But that seems to be, that's the first approach. This would include, for example, number 15, there's some things I can pass on the reason for the mitzvah to you, and some things I have no permission to reveal the reason, you have to work them out later. And if you look very carefully at one of the sources that we actually skipped over it before, but when it talks about Moshe getting everything on Har Sinai, it talks about them showing to Moshe. Look at number 16. Number 16 is one of these sources that says he got everything. Melamed sheherahu hakadosh baruch hu leMoshe. God showed Moshe. What's leharot? Who speaks modern Hebrew? Leharot means to show someone something. Why does it say that God showed Moshe everything? The Gemara and the Mishnah and the Talmud, everything was ever going to be. Showed implies he shows it to him. And in fact, that is what number 17 says. Number 17 is the commentary on the Mishnah of the Tosfos Yom Tov, who was an 18th century thinker, and he says like this, Amashe Herahu, he showed him. Zebederech Re'ya Bilvad. This is like read only. It's like a PDF. Read only. Yeah, you can't change it, you can't pass, you can't send it to anyone. You can just read it on the screen. Loi b'derech mesira, not mesira. This word mesira is very important. You ever heard the word mesora? Mm-hmm. What does mesora mean?
Transmission,
that is a tradition. Limsor means to hand over. Yeah? It's very interesting. Mesora, the focus of the word tradition in English, is focusing on me and what I got from them. Yeah? Tradition. The word mesora in Hebrew is much more focused on giving over to the next generation, not what I happen to have from the last generation. There's a subtle difference, but it's an important difference. Anyway, that's not for now. So this first approach seems to be, yes, Moshe Rabbeinu had this mega, unbelievable nevuah. He saw everything that would ever be, the future, and the Book of Prophets, and the Book of Kings, and the Mishnah, and the Talmud, and what Shira is about to say half an hour from now, which is going to blow the world apart. Everything Moshe Rabbeinu saw. What did he give to Yahshua? He gave to Yahshua, you know, the stuff he needed to know, the part that was which was thorough, the details that he needed to have, and the outlines in order to work out later details, that puts the two together nicely. You understand how the two now work together? What's the point of Moshe Rabbeinu having this mega vision of everything? So I'm not sure. It may be connected with the idea that we see. This is quite a famous idea. You remember the idea that a baby taught the whole Torah in the womb? And then the Malach kind of bangs him on the lip, and everyone knows that, yeah? So, and you have this little thing.
Everyone does, so.
Well, okay, fine. It's quite a popular image that people have, that the baby taught the whole Torah in the womb. What is the purpose of teaching the entire Torah to the baby, only for the baby to forget it? What's the purpose of that? Frustrating, no?
Right. Remembering instead of
Right. Right. Remembering it always feels like you, like, an idea always feels like you've just grabbed something that was there already, and you now see it clearly. The idea is that Torah is infinite, because Torah is God's Ratzon, Torah is God's mind. How can God's mind work in a finite world? How can you put those two together? There has to be a kind of input from above. putting it into this world. And then you can access it. Otherwise, it's inaccessible. How can finite people access an infinite Torah? So I think the baby idea is the same idea, that it's in your brain, and you now just have to access it. By the way, that malach, this has nothing to do with this shir, but this is just an interesting point. The malach, that angel, let me decide what an angel is, that teaches you Torah in the womb when you're a baby. By the way, it doesn't say men. It says everybody. It doesn't even say Jews. It says everybody. That malach is there, is the one that greets you the moment you die and takes you to the Shemayim. And that malach is there to say, so no, no. So did you get it back? Or did you not? Yeah? So that's part of the kind of consequence of the final, anyway. But so I think it's been the same idea. So the world needs Torah. Torah needs to be brought into the world. Moshe Rabbeinu has to have this kind of mega download in order to go into his head. And now it's in the world. Now it's in the human realm. There is a story they tell about the Vilna Gaon, whose main student, Rav Chaim Vital, was trying to work out a very major problem in Halacha. And he was crunching his mind for days and days and days, and he couldn't get it. He stayed up the whole night. He spent the whole night, and he worked it out. He was running to the Vilna Gaon to tell him, I worked it out, I got the answer. And as he's running through the Beit HaMikdash, he sees a father learning with a little kid, like 9 years old, and the father asks him the same question that he's been trying to work out. And he sits there and he listens, and the kid just comes up with the answer, like that. That he came between days, he's completely deflated. So he goes to the Vilna Gaon and says, I don't understand, this kid, I'm the Rosh Hashiva, and this kid's a kid, and I took 3 days to work it out, and this kid gets it like this? So he says, no, you don't understand. Before you worked it out, that Torah was not kind of accessible. It was on the world. You brought that Chiddush into the world, and now it's out there now. People can access it. That's just a more mystical idea. I'm not getting into it now. I don't fully understand it. But that's approach number one. Yes, Moshe Rabbeinu saw everything. And we see a similar medrash, by the way, at the end of Moshe Rabbeinu's life. Remember when he looks on the mountain over Israel, and Rashi brings it down, that he sees the whole of Israel, and he sees the whole of the future. Yeah? Similar idea. So maybe the same idea in terms of Torah. That's the first approach. But that's not the real approach that we need to focus on. It's a true approach. And the second one is not mutually exclusive, but the second one is the one I really want you to think about, which is this. Have a look in source number 18. And this is when it starts to get difficult and important. Well, it's all important, but this is where it gets more important. Okay. Again, what's the question? How can it be that Moshe received everything on Har Sinai? The future, Mishnah, Talmud, and yet the other sources say, what are you talking about? It's too big, you can't possibly come up with all the details. He received the outline, and the details follow later generations. So here is the clue, here is the key. 18. The Chikol HaTorah Lamad Moshe, we have this source, it's like a paraphrase of number 13. The Chikol HaTorah Lamad Moshe, did he really learn the whole Torah? So big. Ela klalim lamadu HaKadosh Baruch Hu LaMoshe. Hashem taught him klalim. And now I brought you in number 19, an 18th century parish on what this word klalim means. Klalim lamadu HaKadosh Baruch Hu LaMoshe. Moshe was taught klalim. So look here, what it says. Do come in, there's enough room. This is squidge in Nina. Ela darche hadroshes. These are the three most important words you're going to learn today, which is just when Nina walks in the door. Okay, so find yourself a seat. That's not easily done, actually. Is there a little place for the squeeze at the end? No, pull out a chair and come and sit over here. Okay? Don't worry about it. Please don't feel self-conscious. We're not really looking at you.
I'm looking at you,
Nina. Okay, let's just pop this over here.
Well, we kind of have you in our class today, so I keep
let's go. Elu darche hadroshes. Now, what does that mean? If you've missed these three words, you missed the whole class. Elu darche hadroshes. This is the derech, the way of drashot shekol mida melamed le'ein cheker, that every measure can be taught out without end, without any limitation. What does this mean? Drashos means the following. What's lizvosh in Hebrew? What's lizvosh? What's a drasha?
To explain.
To explain, very good. To explain. The word drasha became the colloquial word for the rabbi's sermon. Yeah, drasha. That's not really what a drasha is. A drasha, a lidrosh, is when you draw out, using certain methodologies, which we'll talk about next time, maybe the time after a little bit, when you draw out the details using these tools, like a toolkit. In other words, the psukim are written down, in the verses are written down in the written Torah. Moshe Rabbeinu received, amongst other things, which we'll see later, Moshe received the tools, here's a toolkit. I don't know why I drew it like that, but it makes kind of sense. Here's a toolkit. You can take those tools out, apply them to the verses of the Torah, and from there you derive new halachas, and you end up with new halacha. Now, is that halacha really new? Well, yes, because it's only through the use of the methodology that you derived it. But was it there before? Yes, it was there, but it was there in perfection. It was all there. You just have to bring it out. And this is very, very critical, because one part, not the only part, but one important part of oral law is exactly this, is the application of these tools which were given to Moshe Rabbeinu on Har Sinai, and some of them are also logic tools, like Kal Vachomer. Kal Vachomer means what? All the more so. Two fat guys sit on a park bench and the park bench breaks. If three fat guys sat on the same park bench, would it break? You don't need a revelation to tell you that answer. You know the answer. It has to break if it's the same park bench. If it's a different park bench, okay, there's no Kal Vachomer. I don't know. But if it's the same park bench, if two guys broke the bench, three guys have to break the bench. Okay? So, if they're sitting the same way, etc. So, the point is that that's Kal Vachomer. I mean, you don't have to be a Jewish rabbi to know that piece of logic. But that's part of it. And there are many others as well. If you remember in your Siddur, who's got a Siddur here?
Yeah,
any old Siddur will do. Let's have a look. Have you got an article? Have you got an article, Siddur? Because then you might be able to...
It's not like right behind you on your
here. You won. Okay, here's the article of women's Siddur. I've got the article of women's Siddur. Which is just pretty much exactly the same as the article of men's Siddur. It's just a marketing ploy to make women buy a new Siddur. It works, evidently. Okay, so they you'll see in every siddur, this is the standard situation, as I've set out, that at the end of the korbanot, at the end of the sacrifices, which are just before Baruch Shamar, if you remember the structure of the davening, and I'm not getting into detail, the first bit of the davening is brachas, yeah, shalai tani this, shalai tani that, and all the others, and all the other brachas, and then there's this kind of section of korbanos, of the sacrifices, which a lot of people just skip, yeah? One of my rabbis used to say that when people come late to shul, the first thing that gets sacrificed is the korbanos. Okay? Okay, fine. It was funny. It was time. Anyway, so at the end of the korbanos, just before the beginning of the siddur, come back in for Baruch She'amar, etc., you'll see a little paragraph. In the women's siddur, it's on page 30, but it's there in all siddur. Rabbi Yishmael Omer. Rabbi Yishmael says, B'shloisha esrei midyot, with 13 measures, HaTorah nidreshet bahem. The Torah is darshan, drasha. 30, and Rabbi Yishmael lists his list of his 13 methodologies through which the Torah is learned out. These are not the only ones. These are some of them, including Kal Vachomer and others. There are many other people, thank you very much, Julie, right? There are many others as well. And this is a very important source of oral law. Now, what this does is, on one hand, allow you to access the original source given by God, which has those halachas in it. But on the other hand, it allows you to renew and develop halacha as time goes on. The only thing, of course, you need to do is you need to trust the rabbis to be doing it right, which we'll get onto next time. How can I trust the rabbis? Maybe they're making it up. Maybe they're using it wrong. That's not for today. That's for next time. But assuming that process, this is one of the processes of drasha. Now, you see that you can say at the same time that the entire Torah was given to Moshe Rabbeinu, because in these words, the words of the Torah are holy. The words of the Gemara are not holy. The words of the Gemara become holy when you learn them. It's a very important distinction. The Torah, the Chumash, when you learn Chumash, it's the word of Hashem. Therefore, it has infinite depth, infinite breadth, infinite possibilities, and therefore you can keep learning new things out of it. Those words allow themselves to be darshaned, to use a Yiddish expression, into new halachot. Therefore, on the one hand, all was given to Moshe, because the Torah was given to Moshe. On the other hand, new things come out. And therefore, both of these things can be resolved. Let me give you an example as to how this works, and then I'll take a couple of questions before we move on. Look at source number 20. Source number 20 is a very famous source. It's a story. It's a midrash in the Gemara in Menachot. Amar Rabbi Yishmael, actually, maybe read it in English, save my voice. Someone read this out in English, I translated this one. Yes. Nice and loud, please, in your best BBC English. Sorry.
Rabbi Yishmael Rabbi Yehuda said in the name of Rav, when Moshe went up to the heavenly heights, he found God sitting and tying crowns to the letters.
Stop. So he found God sitting and tying crowns to the letters. Just in case you wanted a visual representation, I brought you a little Zion with some crowns on it in the middle. A number of the letters in the Sefer Torah have crowns on them. So he sees God effectively doodling in the Torah, little crowns. So, according to the Midrash. So what happens? Carry on.
He said before him, Master of the Universe, who was holding his axe and reading the Torah without the crown.
In other words, is the Torah not perfect? What does this add to the Torah that you're doodling on the letters? And why these letters and not those letters? What's the purpose? So he carries on.
God said to him, there is one man who will exist in the future in many generations, and his name is Akiva ben Yosef.
This was Rabbi Akiva, who lived around the time of the Mishnah, about 1,500 years later.
In the future, he will expound from every point to crown peace and heaps of halakhot.
In other words, he will be able to learn tilin shel halakhot. Piles and piles of halakhot. Now, Agav, this is Kabbalistic. We don't learn, in terms of practical halakha, anything from the little chukchiks on the letters. Rabbi Akiva and the Kabbalistic thinkers, Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, who's a student of Rabbi Akiva, they do learn things. But anyway, that's not for now. So he's going to learn things. Don't worry, there's going to be a way of learning things from these letters. Carry on.
Moshe said to God, Master of the Universe, show him to me. God answers, get around.
Now it gets very dramatic. So Moshe says, I want to see this guy. This sounds like an amazing individual. So he turns around, and you can just imagine, I'd love to make like a film screenplay of this. He turns around, he kind of fades, sort of mystic music, Harry Potter music, and smoke, do-do-do-do-do-do, you know, and all of a sudden, what happened? Carry on.
Moshe went to sit at the end of the eighth row of students.
Stop there. Moshe is now in Rabbi Akiva's class, sitting on the eighth row. Why the eighth row? When you read a midrash, it's not to be taken literally, it's to be taken every single word of it symbolically. There are only seven rows in the classic Beit Midrash. Moshe is sitting on the eighth row that doesn't really exist. Okay? He's sitting on the eighth row. Carry on.
Eighth row students, but he did not understand what they were saying. He became disheartened.
Stop there. Moshe Rabbeinu is listening to Rabbi Akiva's Torah, and he doesn't understand what they're saying. And he finds this very upsetting. See Moshe Rabbeinu. Yeah, he's read the Gemara Brachos. He knows he received everything on Har Sinai. Why did he not receive this? What's going on? Why did he not feel that this was understandable?
When they reached a certain matter, Rabbi Akiva students asked him, Rabbi, where did you get this from? He answered them, the halacha given to Moshe at Sinai. Moshe was relieved.
Oh, well, that's good. That's fine now. Oh, now I'm happy, says Moshe Rabbeinu. I still don't understand a word they're talking about. But now I know at least he came from me. Now, by the way, Rashi, not for now, Rashi completely circumvents the entire problem with this Mishnah and says that this whole episode happened before he received the Torah. Okay, fine, then all the problems go away. But I'm not learning like Rashi. I'm learning like everybody else, which is that how can it be that Moshe Rabbeinu didn't understand what they were talking about, but Rabbi Akiva says this came down from Moshe Rabbeinu? And the answer that many of the Mefarshim bring is obvious. What did Moshe Rabbeinu learn on Har Sinai? On the process of it. By the way, it's not just Har Sinai. Moshe received the entire Torah through 40 years in the desert, not just on Har Sinai. He received Kalim. You'll see he received certain details as well. But he received Kalim, meaning he, in potential, had the ability to develop this halacha. But Rabbi Akiva, who lived 1,500 years later, developed it out. He brought that potential into actuality. He actually brought that Torah into practical existence. Whereas for Moshe Rabbeinu, it was still yet unlearned. Had Moshe Rabbeinu learned through that thought process, he would have also got to this. It's funny, the Reform movement often bring this Gemara and say, look, even the Orthodox people agree that they didn't receive the whole Torah. Because it says that Moshe Rabbeinu didn't know what we're talking about. Why would the Gemara put something like that in itself to completely disprove itself? It doesn't make any sense. The Gemara is here developing the idea that Moshe Rabbeinu and Rabbi Akiva are living on two different levels. Moshe is living on a potential Torah level, to some degree, a microwave oven. Think about this halacha being the microwave oven equivalent of Rabbi Akiva's time. And Rabbi Akiva is living in the time when the microwave oven, or whatever equivalent was, is a real halacha. And therefore he's able to bring it out. Now, we don't do this sort of bringing halachas down into the existence anymore. We don't do that. Which will be very clear to you by the third session on Wednesday. Okay? But that was one of the ways in which Torah was given and developed, and therefore that's what's going on. And I brought you here two sources which state this very, very clearly. look at the Rambam in number 22, please. Or look at number 21. It's in the Midrash. Dvarim shaloi niglu la Moshe, niglu la Rabbi Akiva v'chavreiros. Things that were not revealed to Moshe were later revealed to Rabbi Akiva and his chavreiros. It's clear from that there are things that Rabbi Akiva was able to actually know that Moshe Rabbeinu didn't know in actuality. And number 22 says the Rambam, hini loi kol masha nimtza l'chachamim. Not everything that we find in the rabbi, shehutziu behekesh, that they brought, this is what hekesh means, droshas, that they brought through out of miyud gimel midas from the 13 ways of learning things. We don't have to say every one of these, ne'ma shehum ne'ma la Moshe Nisina, it was known to Moshe on Sinai. And the Ramban, Nachmanides, gives a little bit of explanation to how this would work in number 23. Shekevan shenema la Moshe b'Sinai, shekablu aleihim Yisrael mitzvahs based in Hagadol. Since one of the mitzvahs that was given to Moses on Sinai is that they would listen later to the rabbis, ubawahem v'tiknu et elu, and they will come and create new things. Kfar nermu kolam l'mish mishina. We can say that in some way they were already given to Moshe on Sinai. The ein hefresh b'neihem ba'amira Sinai el shezeba prat v'zeba klal. And the only difference is that one thing was given in actuality and one thing was given in potential. Let me ask you a question. When you light Hanukkah candles, and this is really what the Ramban is getting at here, what bracha do you make when you light Hanukkah candles? Asher kiddushanu, the mitzvah itself, but tivanu lahadlik nes shel Hanukkah. Now, the Gemara asks this question, but you should have thought of this question. Hanukkah candles is a Torah mitzvah or a rabbinic mitzvah? Rabbinic, everyone reads it, and there's ever not a Torah mitzvah. So how can you say, Asher kiddushanu mitzvah, v'tivanu, and God commanded us, lahadlik nes shel Hanukkah. How when you light Shabbos candles can you say, v'tivanu lahadlik nes shel Shabbat? Where does it say in the Torah? Everyone agrees with the rabbis. No. The rabbis completely created the mitzvah of lighting Shabbos candles. Based on a verse in Isaiah that says you have to have kavod for Shabbat, they created this beautiful mitzvah of lighting Shabbos candles. If you'd have asked David HaMelech's wife, when do you light Shabbos candles? No doubt she would have said, Shabbos what? She said, I know about Shabbos, and I'd never heard of Shabbos candles. Okay, say that. Maybe she did, maybe she didn't. It's irrelevant. The point is that the reason you can say Asher Kiddushanu Mitzvah V'tzivanu is that God did command me to light Shabbos candles because God put in the Torah the mitzvah to listen to the rabbi, and the rabbi learned how to mitzvah to light Shabbos candles, and therefore indirectly, of course, how the whole thing comes is rooted in the Torah. This is a very important principle which forms the backdrop to things that we're going to learn from now on. And this really is the bottom line explanation as to how can it be that everything was given and yet some things came later and developed. So now there is chidush, there are new things coming out, but they're coming out in this format. Okay? Does that make sense? Hey, this is quite a sophisticated analysis, but it's the real analysis. Just to say that everything was given on Sinai and passed down from there on, it's not really the whole story. It's basically the story, but it's much more complicated than that. And therefore, bottom line, and then I'll offer some questions. Bottom line, turn over to Deuteronomy 24 and 25. There are other approaches in that story of Rabbi Akiva. What is the bottom line? So after the bottom line, we'll stop and we'll have some questions. What, therefore, did Moshe Rabbeinu get on Har Sinai? And this is based on the Rambam's analysis in his commentary on the Mishnah. Bottom line is like this. Look at number 13. What I'm going to draw now is three columns, and anyone who's been in my oral class will feel a sense of warming familiarity when they see these three columns. Okay.
What page are we on in the book?
We're on page five. Page five? Okay.
Thank you.
Now, what therefore did Moshe Rabbeinu get on Har Sinai? Bottom line. And this will set the backdrop for next week, which is how things are transmitted. So have a look at number 30. Oh, you shouldn't say 30, you should say 26. My mistake, sorry. It should say 26, 27. I didn't change the numbers. Have a look, please. Says the Rambam in his introduction to the Mishnah. Da. You should know. Ki kol mitzvah shenatan HaKadosh Baruch Hu leMoshe Rabbeinu. Every mitzvah that Hashem gave to Moshe, alav shalom, nafna loy bepeirusha. It was given with a peirush. What does peirush mean? With an explanation. He gives an example. Haya omer lo mitzvah. He gave him a mitzvah. Va'achakach omer lo. And then he said to him, Peirusha, its explanation, the inyana, and its details. Meaning what?
Moshe Rabbeinu, you know, goes up on sometime to the tent of meeting, to the Ohel Moed, and Hashem says to him, right, new mitzvah today, Moshe. Today we're going to learn the mitzvah of matzah. You have to all eat matzah.
So Moshe walks out to the Jewish people, and he says, good news, boys and girls, because we have to eat matzah too. We all have to eat matzah. What's that, sir? I don't know, he never said. When do we have to eat it? Not sure. No, how fast do we have? No, I don't know. But then we'll kind of work it out later. That's not good enough. You know, I need to do this now. I need to be able to work. I can't wait for Rabbi Akiva to work out for someone to tell me how to eat matzah. There's 1,500 years of matzah eating before that. So it's clear, and this is number one column, that with all of the mitzvahs, 613 mitzvahs that we got in the written Torah, together with them came a user guide, which is what we call, if you like, halakha, le Moshe, Sinai. And this is details. Okay? User guide. In other words, user guide for, I like bananas. I think bananas are more beautiful than lemons. Okay? I don't actually, but for the purpose of this class, I could. It's up to you. Maybe Helen likes kumquat. She'll take a kumquat on Sukkot. Why not? The answer is no. The Torah should, the halakha le Moshe Sinai is, This is a citron fruit, this is exactly an eshrog. This is a lulav, this is a matzah, etc., etc. And therefore one part of the Torah that we have from Sinai is this basic user guide. And all that you need to do is transmit. All that needs to be done in column one is just make sure the next generation gets it, and gets it right, and gets it accurately. That's all. Because the information's there. They're just passing it on, right? What's the matzah? What's the lulav? What's the this? What's the that? What's the user guide? How do I keep mitzvahs? The peirush, the inyan, etc. So all that I need to do for the next however many thousands of years with column one is just make sure that I pass it on to you, you get it, and you pass it on to the next people and they get it. Okay? Column number two, and that for most people, all their understanding of oral law is column number one. But we just spent 20 minutes telling each other that there is a column number two. And this is what we call the drashot. The drashot means these are the klalim. Remember? These are the rules of interpretation. And these develop. Moshe Rabbeinu started doing number two. He started developing that even when he was alive. Yeshua did it. David did it. Everyone did it. The later rabbis did it up until the end of the time of the Mishnah, which we'll talk about later. So the rule, the name of the game in this column is interpret, and then transmit, if you like. But interpret is the key thing here. The third column we didn't speak about yet, which we'll speak about more next time and time after, which is rabbinic law. Rabbinic law is stuff which is completely created later by the rabbis. We call it Durabanan, yeah? Because you're familiar with the difference between Min HaTorah and Midrabanan, yeah? One is Torah law, one is the rabbinic law. Three is rabbinic law. One and two are Min HaTorah. Don't make the mistake of thinking two is Midrabanan. It's not. This is Min HaTorah, and so is one. Okay? And this one is Midrabanan. Now, therefore, when I open up a page of Talmud, I am faced with different column. I don't see the column. It's not in three fonts. It would be useful if it were. Yeah, it's not in three colours. But all the material I'm reading when I'm reading the oral law, which is basically the Talmud for our purposes, it's stuff that was given by Moshe on Har Sinai and passed down. Stuff which was developed later and changed in each generation. New things come up. We have the tools. We can create those drashot. And stuff that was brought in later by the rabbis. Okay? Now, just as a prelude, if you like, to next week's class, let me ask you a question. Is there machloket? Is there dispute and disagreement within the oral law? Yes or no? A little bit? Lots. Now, is dispute a good thing or a bad thing? It's a good thing. Depends on what? Okay, let's assume it does lead to a productive outcome. But if I'm telling you the Torah is from God, the oral Torah is from God, and it's filled with disputes, that makes you feel good, or that makes you feel bad?
A little yucky.
Because most people grow up, especially as I said at the beginning of the class, if you grew up in a kind of from school system, they're told these two things. The Torah is min hashamayim, and was passed down through all the generations, and it's full of dispute, and nobody agrees with each other. But you have to wear tights.
There were three things I told them. Right. But they'll
ask that you can disregard if you like. The point is that any thinking person, which Baruch Hashem 95% of them aren't, okay, but any thinking person will sit up and say, one second, you're telling me that the Torah is Min HaShemayim. It all came down from God. But nobody agrees on what this Torah is. That doesn't make me sleep easy at night. I don't want a halacha that you're telling me I have to keep when nobody seems to agree on what it is. Surely it got messed up somewhere. And if it got messed up somewhere, maybe it's all wrong. Therefore, thank you very much. I go to the cinema on Friday night. The point is that any thinking person should have had that question if they had that education. The point is they had a messed up education. Because the reality is, there are three columns here. In column number one, where the material was given to Moshe and Sinai and passed down, transmitted, is machlokas a good thing or a bad thing? A bad thing, because machlokas means that something's gone wrong. Broken telephone. Somebody's missed a trick and we've got it all wrong. But in column number two, and indeed in column number three, would you expect there to be machlokas? A machlokas, bless you, machlokas is built into the nature of the Torah Shabbat test. This rabbi decides to make a new halacha. Chicken's going to be fleshing. Is every rabbi in the world got to agree with that? No. It's his idea. He thinks chicken should be fleshing. He thinks it shouldn't be. Okay, machlokas is built in. Number two, interpreting the psukim in the Torah. Isn't this something in which you would expect different people to have different ways of approaching it? Isn't that the whole point? That it's flexible, that it's built into the system? The Rambam tells us an incredible fact, and you can test this out. The Torah's got lots of machloket, lots of dispute. There's not one single dispute in the entire oral law, which is column number one. Every single dispute is column number two or column number three. In the written Torah. Which one is the written Torah, not the oral Torah?
Column number three.
What was the other thing? Column number three is rabbinic law.
I thought you said, where are all the disputes
in column three? Oh, yeah, fine, good. Column number three and column number two. In other words, column number three and column number two is where every dispute is. Now, once you understand that, then you can now go back to sleep at night, sleep comfortably. Because, yes, the Torah has lots of dispute, or by the way, it's not as much as you think. A lot less than you think, because you don't even think about things that everybody agrees on, which is most of the stuff. But even where there is dispute, it's nothing to do with broken telephones.
Oh, like you mean Shabbos and kosher and all.
Yeah, it's to do with this stuff. Now, this will come out more as we go through it. But that's the answer to the intelligent, question about how can it be that the Torah is in the Shemayim, and yet there's all this machloket. We can deal more with that next time, but just remember that for now. I am now going to stop talking. There's 12 minutes left, and I'm going to take questions so that you can get clarity on what we've discussed today. Yes, what's your name?
Danielle.